Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Alicia Calarotta, director of the distinguished Galleria d'Arte Maggiore in Bologna, Italy. The gallery was founded in 1978 by Alicia's parents, Franco and Roberta Calarotta, who have established the international prestige of the gallery through a permanent collection of museum-quality works by 20th century international masters. The museum quality of their collection has been enhanced through important collaborative relationships with museums and institutions in Italy and abroad, such as the Metropolitan Museum, New York, the Reina Sofia Museum in Madrid, and many others. Since Alicia joined the gallery, she has brought tradition together with an innovative new perspective. She completed her PhD in art history at the University of Bologna, studied further in Paris, then did an internship in New York at the United Nations Italian Mission, met many of the leading artists at the time, and then decided to return to Italy to work with her family. The gallery has participated in numerous major art fairs such as Art Basel in Switzerland, Miami Beach in Hong Kong, TEFAF in the Netherlands, Friesmasters in London, and the Art Moves Show in New York, among many others. And for an innovative venue, in 2019, the Calarotta family has opened a foundation in Venice, ACP Palazzo Franchetti. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Galleria d'Arte Maggiore has been in your family since 1978, when your parents, Franco and Roberta, founded the gallery. Can you tell us about the history of the company and how your parents became involved in the art world?
So they started to collect Italian artists, and my parents get passionate about art very, very soon. They start to write about art for some small magazine around Italy. And around 10 years later, they decided to found the gallery. As you told, the gallery was founded during the 70s. And during the 70s, the gallery was a meeting point between the collectors, the curators, the artists, everyone who wanted to have more, a deeper knowledge about art went to the gallery, and they start to talk with my parents, and they start to talk with the curator who came to the gallery, with the artist who came to the gallery. So the art world was smaller, maybe more local, at least national in some way, but the contact was much more direct between people at the time. So everything started from here.
And when did you become involved?
I became involved. So actually, I grew up in the art world. So I started to be involved from the very beginning. But I made the decision to work with my parents. Before, I take a PhD in history of art at the University of Bologna, which is the oldest university in the world. And then I went to study also in Paris, and then I did an internship at the Italian embassy, Italian mission at the UN, United Nations in New York. And in the meantime, I started also to write for some newspaper, smaller review. So I met many artists through my parents, but also through my journalist work in some way. And I realized I had a deep connection more with art than with any other field. So I decided to come back to Europe, to come back to Italy, and I started to work with my parents. It's not always the easy, but because we are different generation, but this is the make us in some way take much more, give us the possibility to add the view of different generation, the experience together with maybe a fresh eye. So it gives us an intergenerational knowledge of the artwork.
Who were some of the most highly prized artists that your gallery started out with, and what's drawn your family to these particular artists?
So, of course, we are recognized for Giorgio Morandi, for example. And it was easy to get connected with Morandi because we come from Bologna. Morandi, he come from Bologna. And my parents get involved with the family of Morandi too. And I met Morandi in person, so at the very end of his life. Starting to work with Morandi was really easy. It was natural in some way for something like us who come from Bologna and everything. But the same happened, for example, with Giorgio De Chirico. My parents met De Chirico. They were young. They went to Rome in his studio in Piazza di Spagna, and they like each other, so they start to work together. And then they always looked for a direct relationship with artists. So, for example, we worked with Alan Jones, with Robert Indiana, with Zar or Armand or Mel Ramos. We met all these artists. There were a personal relationship between my parents and them. And from that relationship, we built up a business together. Personally, I met also Yoko Ono, Robert Rauschenberg. It was at the very end of his life, and it was when I was living in New York. The exchange to talk with an artist, it's always something that gives you a more culture, a more passionate point of view on art.
You recently exhibited works by Anthony Clave, an innovative mixed-media Spanish artist, in a show entitled A Dialogue Between Figure and Color. Can you describe this artist's works and tell us a little bit more about designing and installing this show?
Yes, of course. Clave has always been attracted by the practical and manual aspect of creating an artwork. He born a few years later, the main exponent of the Nouveau-Realism. As you know, the Nouveau-Realism is a French movement in the same year of pop art. And Clave shared with the artists of Nouveau-Realism the use of objects and materials within his artistic production. Since he was young, he combined an interest in traditional painting with the technical and stylistic research, putting together the classic use of a brush with practices such as lettering, assemblage, and collage. His curiosity led him to concentrate on different forms of the artistic field. As well as being by definition an artist, he also dealt with engraving, sculpture, illustration, and even the production of stage costume and the theatrical setting in the 50s. Some trace of this experience can still be found in the later use of materials such as fabric and tapestry elements. The success came during the 80s when, while his work started to be displayed in an international exhibition, Clave was invited to participate at the Venice Biennale in 1984 as the main exponent of the Spanish Pavilion. The show at the gallery represents moves from the figurative field based on the representation of subjects that refer to the noble descendants of the 17th century of pain tradition, to the purely abstract realm in which the artist's ability to combine materials emerged through the addition of cutouts and the unexpected aluminium foil. The serial of king, queen, and warriors as something mythological, but in some way also an ironic flavor. On the opposite, the paintings which are not figurative are immersed in a more meditative and personal atmosphere, and the show presents all these paintings.
Do you represent a lot of contemporary artists as well?
We work with the Italian artists in their mid-career or just well-known on international art world, as for example, Ettore Spalletti, Sissi, but we work also with some Chinese artists, as for example, Tong Yan Runan. For example, we did a show on three artists, the father and the two sons. The father was Roberto Matta, was a Sicilian artist, naturalized in French and Italy. And his two songs, the American one, who is Gordon Matta Clark, and the Italian one, who is Pablo Chaurren, who became both artists. As you know, Gordon Matta Clark, for example, was one of the biggest stars of the art, contemporary art during the 70s in New York, for example. And Pablo was the same, but in Rome, in Italy.
Art fairs can play a significant role in the sales of arts for many galleries. Can you tell us about your experience with art fairs and which you've attended?
Yes, of course. So there are different ways to deal with the art fair today. There are so many art fairs that it's difficult to choose what to do and what not to do. Our selection comes from where our collectors are and where we have a good feedback from the collectors. So we started to do Art Basel Hong Kong before it became Art Basel Hong Kong, and each year we go to the fair. Last year we did the TIFAF in Maastricht for the first time ever, and we decided to come back because the answer of the public was so good. We do the Armory Show in New York. We do MiArt. My parents did one of the oldest art fair in Europe, which is Bologna Arte Fiera. They did for 30 years, but then the art world became so different, so they decided to quit. We did Art Basel. We did Art Basel Miami. We did FIAC. We did Fritz Master. Sometimes it was a good experience, sometimes less. It depends from year to year. But art fair right now, it's a way to spread your artwork where you don't have an exhibition venue. But as I told you, there are so many today that I feel that something is going to change.
Is there another way that you would prefer to be able to connect with your clients and the people that are really interested in the artists that you represent?
Yes, we decide to bet on being Italian, actually. We come from one of the most beautiful countries in the world. We think that in our country we have some of the most beautiful city and very special city in the world. So actually, we decide to open a foundation in Venice, which is one of more interesting cities in the world, also for art world, because the Biennale, for example, which is really an event that attires millions of art lovers, collectors, artists from all over the world. So we try to propose something different, not to go an art fair where there are millions of things to see, millions of people to talk with, but to propose a slow way and an old way, like it was during the 70s, to connect with art. So to go in one place, to start to talk with the curator, with the artist, meet other collectors. This is what we are trying to do right now. There are always us behind. The name is ACP, Palazzo Franchetti. And we are working on it. Right now we have an exhibition of Jean Dubuffet, for example, made together with the Dubuffet Foundation. So we give also the possibility to the foundation outside from Italy to exhibit in Italy. And so this is a way to meet also new collectors and new people involved in the art world.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and invaluable insight on the art scene and commercial galleries with our audience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you.
Thank
it was my pleasure.
That was Alicia Calarota of Galleria d'Arte Maggiore speaking with us from Bologna, Italy. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is Natalie Christensen, American-born, currently living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Formerly a psychotherapist, Natalie was captivated by the brilliant light of the Santa Fe area and was drawn into the art of photography to explore this new visual world. Natalie's innovative artistic photography has been shown in solo and group exhibitions in London, Berlin, New York, Los Angeles, and more, highlighting her engaging new forms and unique interpretations. Her photographs are held in permanent collections of the Fort White Museum of Art and the University of Texas at Tyler, to name a few. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Landscapes can have a surprising impact on our intuitive senses. How did moving to Santa Fe awaken yours?
That's a question I've been asked, not so much about the landscape specifically, but with such a different environment than where I came from. I was born and raised and lived my whole life in the southern part of the United States. Very beautiful and green and rolling. That was my norm. I come to the Southwest and it's just expansive skies and wide open spaces and mountains and it's high desert. And I had just never spent an extended amount of time in an environment like that. So I just was trying to make sense of it, I think, and spent a lot of time studying it, just looking, not so much with my camera, but trying to take it in and process it. It was just so different from any place I'd ever experienced before. I think it's a natural reaction for most people who come here and have never seen it before.
And how did that lead to moving into photography after a career in a completely different profession?
Honestly, I'm not sure that I have an understanding of that that's completely conscious yet. I didn't plan to become a photographer. I didn't say, hey, I think I want to be an artist after moving here. I just started taking pictures with my iPhone. I felt like a tourist for a long time after living here, at least a couple of years. It is a really popular destination for tourism, and there are a lot of unique things about Santa Fe. And so I was just taking pictures of it as a way to share it with friends and family on social media. And the more I did that, the more I wanted to do it. And within about 6 months of starting to take pictures of my new home, I just wanted to do it all the time. Became really interested in it. I was spending hours a day just roaming around with my camera. It took over me rather than a directed decision to take up photography. It just kind of happened organically.
In Santa Fe, there are quite a lot of other artists. Were you familiar with some of those? Did they influence your particular stylistic focus?
No. I mean, definitely. I have met a number of artists after living here. Some of my closest friends are artists, not photographers so much, more painters and sculptors. But I think I made a decision. The longer I was making photographs and sort of finding my voice with it, I did make a decision to not point my camera towards the traditional things that the Southwest is famous for, like the mountains, like the adobe architecture, the indigenous pueblos that are here. All of those things have been photographed countless times. And while they're all very interesting and beautiful to look at, I didn't feel like my photographs of those subjects had anything new to say. So I was focused more on what I would call the mundane or ordinary architecture of this place, which is something that I don't think had been explored too much yet. I don't think I'm the only person doing it, but I wasn't seeing much of that. And that is what I was just naturally drawn to. I wanted to look at that subject.
And finding your voice and not photographing in a traditional way, your work has distinctively innovative, vibrant colors and has an eloquent, flowing, rhythmic, linear movement. What is your process for capturing the elements in your compositions?
I think people who know my work, whether they follow my work on social media or they've come across it in some other way, I do think that the color is something that jumps out and is sort of a mark of my work. But that's a really hard thing to find in Santa Fe, believe it or not, because
the historic architectural boards that govern how buildings look, how houses look. There is a standard where everything needs to be in the Pueblo style of architecture, which is adobe or adobe-like structures, flat roofs. And everything is some shade of tan or brown on the exterior, so stucco and brown. And so while that looks really beautiful here when you take it all in, and I'm not saying it's not attractive, it is, but you don't see a lot of color here because it's not allowed. So I have to really search for that, and that's usually found in the suburbs or on the outskirts of town in a few places that I have discovered over the last few years. So I look for color first, and then I'm interested in geometrical forms. That's another thing that's kind of hard to find here because adobe architecture is very rounded and earthen, soft, and again, it's very beautiful, but it's not what I'm taking pictures of. So my process is to drive around my car, usually with my camera alone, and just drive until I see something. I usually don't have a plan in my mind of what I'm going to do. I just kind of rely on my intuition to tell me where to go. And then I get out of my car and walk around or drive around in parking lots.
You've also done some projects that have evolved in your collaboration with an artist in London, Jim Eyre.
Yes.
Can you describe one of those and how that has changed in your work?
Jim Eyre and I followed each other on social media, Instagram. We both are interested in urban minimalism and decided a couple of years ago to try a collaboration where we would blend our two worlds together in a single image. So kind of London street scenes meet New Mexico street scenes. And we created altered landscapes, altered cityscapes. So we wanted people to have a psychological experience in looking at the work, and we were trying to mimic the experience of being in a social media environment, the impact that it has on creativity and artists, the impact it has on the decisions we make about the work we do and the work that we share, and just how that process can be psychologically disruptive, but we wanted to visually represent that in these landscapes. We made 12 different works of art that we then showed at large scale in a converted parking garage in London that's now Artist Studios and Gallery Space. And we showed these 12 pieces in February of 2018. There was a lot of interest in the work. We had a lot of support on social media and just in the London kind of arts community there. And then since then, we've expanded the project and shown it a couple more times, once in Albuquerque at the University of New Mexico School of Architecture. And then we showed the work in Santa Fe this past April. This was new work in the series, all focused on swimming pool theme. And we showed the work inside an empty swimming pool on Route 66 here in Santa Fe. It became a converted art gallery. Basically, people walked down into the swimming pool and had this experience of viewing the art at very large scale. And we're still hoping to show it again, possibly in Berlin, and just continuing to work on the project.
You've also done a series exploring cars in the Southwest. How did this series begin?
Sort of by accident. I'm never really go out thinking about a particular project or a focus. I just take pictures of certain things that I'm drawn to and saw this scene in Albuquerque. It really looked kind of straight out of a Breaking Bad episode, but it was an old Lincoln Continental, kind of a butterscotch color, and it was bashed in the side, and the scene around it, the colors sort of all coordinated with that car that just happened to be there. And I was just taken with it and took some images and felt like they were successful pictures, and then just continued to look for other cars in a found scene. They all are typically old vintage cars, not fancy ones though, more like mundane sorts of old cars, but usually they have some kind of beautiful color going on, they're in an interesting environment, and I'm able to use formal composition and a tight frame to combine geometry with something that is unexpected, and that's usually the car.
And as a psychologist for most of your career, you've learned the art of asking questions. What would you like to invite your viewers to explore when they experience your work?
You know, it depends on what the symbol is in the photograph. And I try not to lead the viewer too much with how I title the image. I don't want to make that too obvious. I first take a picture of something that speaks to me symbolically. What is happening in that scene that taps on something in my own life or creates a bit of an uneasy feeling in me, but I'm not certain what that is. So if the viewer has a similar experience, if they just pause for a moment at the photograph and have a similar experience of a bit of an uneasy feeling, even though my scenes in these photos are pretty familiar to most people, whether it's a closed door or a staircase or a swimming pool, an empty pool, I don't want to tell them any more than that. I'm just curious in what gets tapped in them. What does it remind them of? What experiences do they think of from their own life when they see it?
Do you have any projects coming up that you'd like to tell us about? Any exhibitions?
I'm going to be part of a delegation going to Dubai and Abu Dhabi in November, which I'm super excited about. It's hosted by the Meridian International Center and the United Arab Emirates Embassy. And they're inviting 13 photographers, architects, architectural curators, and an architectural critic to come to Dubai and Abu Dhabi and see architecture, make photographs, have an experience of that place, and then hopefully tell others about it. I'm not an architectural photographer in the traditional sense. I see myself as an artist and a photographer who sometimes takes pictures of architecture, but to be included in this pretty esteemed group of people, it's just such an honor to be considered, invited, and hosted, and then to go to a part of the world which I have never been to, and I'm not sure I would have otherwise. While that's not an exhibition, it is an experience related to my art that I'm super excited about.
Well, I don't blame you. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to share your story and insight with us. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we wish you continued success. Have a wonderful time there.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for your interest in my work.
Thank you. That was Natalie Christensen, highly recognized photographer, speaking with us from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.